Hey, what's going on, everybody? Excited to be back here rocking out with you for another segment of our monthly web series. Steve and I are excited to chat about today's topic. There's this stigma around the two commas. You know, when you get that second comma, right? People start to realize that that's real money. I'm not saying that, your first 5,000 or your first 10,000 isn't real money. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is when you're borrowing money and you're borrowing 5 or 10,000, the bank looks at that totally different than they look at you borrowing $1 million. So
For sure.
it's the same thing outside of banks. It's the same thing in the fintech world. It's the same thing in the, equipment finance world. And we're going to go into to a lot of it here. What does it take to qualify? What are your, the common pitfalls? Where are people, falling short currently? But why this conversation? And Steve, feel free to weigh in here some. Today's conversation is really because we're seeing now more than ever, the need for borrowing $250,000 to $10 million
Absolutely.
outside of the bank is greater than ever.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I think banks are just a little bit uncertain, and with that little bit of uncertainty, if it's not perfect, they're not lending. They would rather lend you 15 million or 50 million if you can afford it, right? And if you can't, they're looking at that 10 million and under bucket as, like sub debt, right? Like almost like outside of what they want to be doing. So because of that, there's a lot of opportunity for people like our partners that are on this conversation, and ultimately leveraging resources like the ones we have. So, we'll go ahead.
Yeah, no, just what I was about to say is if anyone does any research at all on this, you'll find what Tony's saying is right in line with what's happening currently in the current markets. Private credit has been on a substantial growth pattern for the last 4 or 5 years and is really, really challenging conventional banking and private equity. What I mean by private credit, I mean, not institutional lenders, not bank level. These are private groups that pool together funds from a group of investors. They put together a fund and they determine an investment mandate, meaning a set of guidelines, a set of capital guidelines that they're capable of lending on. And all those details are typically preset, predetermined. So when you go apply with any type of private credit institution or of course a conventional bank, they know their guidelines already, right? So when you go in and you apply with them, they're looking to see if your ratios match their guidelines. If your the specifics of your financing request, your credit package meets their guidelines. If it doesn't, then unfortunately that's not a deal that they can lend on. But private credit has expanded that criteria, their lending criteria and capability over the last several years dramatically. And again, that's why they're posing a significant challenge to conventional banking right now.
And a big part of that is just the need itself, right?
Absolutely.
When you have borrowers that have real needs and they have assets and they have revenue and they can afford these things, it's not necessarily about anything other than access to the capital. So when you start to have these private lenders and online lenders that are coming in and filling in these unique niches, whether you're talking equipment finance, you're talking CRE, you're talking MCA, whatever lane you want to talk, the lenders in these industries, they're there to lend money. And I
That's right.
think that's what makes them so different than a traditional bank, is the traditional bank is there to hold your money.
That's right.
So
Well,
the,
they're there to trade it
yeah,
more so than
yeah.
anything. People forget that, in
Well,
banking, right? That's where they make their money. They make their
100%.
money on the trade side.
Yes, 100%.
So earnings from interest on loans Or leases, that's bread and that's just extra, very small.
It's a small portion of how they're actually making their money. It's, a lot of it has to do with real estate investment. A lot of it has to do with naming rights. You always see like the Wells Fargo Center or Bank of America Arena, or that's where your deposits are going, in case you were wondering.
No, I mean,
And then into the insurance world, right? Banks are huge in the insurance world. So, once banks were allowed to own assets like an individual, it opened up the world for them to invest, right? And that's what they've done. And you can't blame them for it, but you need to know what's the playing field look like, so that when I go out there, I'm putting my best foot forward. And that's what today is all about. So we'll get into the presentation here. 92 people. See, we were joking before because there was only a couple of you on. So shout out to the first few, because we were a little nervous there for a second. But now 93 people, we're getting going. I'm Tony Cimino, VP of Business Development here at Rock. We've been going at it for 4+ years now, under the Rock brand, but we've been funding commercial finance for 15+ years. Steve, to my left, who's our director of commercial finance, has been with us almost a year already, which is crazy to think how
Really
fast that year
fast.
went. But at the same time, has been in the industry, what, 20+ years now?
About 20, 22 years now.
And Steve's whole focus, guys, what makes the tandem, or the twosome, the gruesome twosome here, what makes us so powerful is our complementary product knowledge. Right, Steve comes from a world of where he's been in traditional lending. He's seen what it's like on the back end of working with banks and through banks, and then even outside of that, but more focused in the commercial real estate asset-backed types of products, as well as equipment financing. And my own experience has been in primarily unsecured financing. So everything outside of what I just mentioned, you're talking term loans, lines of credit, getting cash to business owners directly, right? No assets tied to those products. So we're going to dive in here. A little bit about Rock Financial, right? We've been, like I said, rocking and rolling and funding businesses for a good amount of time now. And we pride ourselves on the process. Not to quote the Philadelphia 76ers, but we are totally about trusting the process here. We are tied to the process, not the outcome. If you are a borrower looking for information, we are a great resource for you. You can utilize our website, you can utilize our social media, but most importantly, you can leverage our team, our team's knowledge, our team that is consistently seeing 10+ thousand applications per month for funding, and then all the information that comes from having that tool, right? So we know who's doing what, how much money they're approving, what the terms are, and then we give that information back to you guys in forms of great webinars like this one. So today's conversation, question number one: what do I need? Like, what qualifications are there for a $1 million business loan, right? Question number two: how long does it take me to get $1 million, right? And then question number three: what are the products? Right? How do I leverage what's out there, what I have, and ultimately blend between the qualifications of the products and the products themselves? How do I leverage that into getting a $1 million+? Well, there's going to be a few things, and we're going to go over kind of all of these things. Credit worthiness, and these are not in order, because if they were in order, I would put use of funds first. Just throwing that out there. Steve might disagree, but I think he agrees.
No, that's a pretty, yeah. What's the purpose, right? Let's
Exactly.
start there. What's the goal? What's the purpose?
Well, because that'll give us the product, right? That's the key here, guys. You don't decide what type of funding is best for you. Your need does, right?
That's right.
So if you're buying equipment, there's equipment financing, there's cash, right? But you're probably not going to go get a commercial real estate loan to buy equipment. Like, that's not smart, right? So just understand that, right? Like, and I know that may sound like basic information, but that's exactly what the underwriters are going to do when they look at your applications from the businesses you work with. They're going to see, are you checking boxes or are you not? right? Well, if you're looking for equipment, we can't give you a commercial real estate loan, right? Do you meet the credit? I mean, do you have the assets for something like an AR line, right? If you don't have receivables in your business, if you're a restaurant, unfortunately, there's no receivables, you know, you have to be in the B2B industry, right? So now we're starting to eliminate options, eliminate products. Ultimately, dialing down to now, okay, the products that are available, are you the right candidate to apply for them? And will you ultimately get that approval that you're looking for? But more importantly than an approval is actually getting the funding. And I think that that's another big part of this. You know, I see a lot of lenders these days that will approve deals. I see a lot less that are funding them.
Right.
You know,
That's
they're,
right.
you know, when push comes to shove, it's very easy in the marketplace, right? Imagine being a lender. Let me paint a picture for you for a second. You have a borrower that needs $500,000, right? And you believe that you're really only going to give them 100,000, right? But you want them to go with your offer. Why not show them a $500,000 pre-approval up front? And then based on whatever stipulations you already knew, you were only comfortable with 100,000 anyway, you're going to rework that thing on the back end. It happens all the time, guys. I'm not telling you information that's not readily available for you if you apply for funding these days. So that's where we're seeing through the lens of all of the information that we have and saying, okay, I see you like to approve deals up to 500,000, but you only like to fund them up to 150,000.
Right.
And we have the numbers that will tell us that. So if we have a borrower that needs 150, you're the one. But if we have a borrower that needs 500, we're going to have to go with your competition. Even if they move a little slower or they require an additional document or two, they're getting those deals done where you're not. And that's why this is such a detailed process, right? $1 million is you might only have one shot at applying. You know, when you apply with the right lender the first time with all the right information, it becomes very easy to get $1 million.
That's right.
You know, it's when some of these things are out of whack that it becomes challenging, right? So number one, use of funds. Number two, I would blend the rest of
Yeah, they
them.
pretty much go, they tie together pretty
Yeah.
well, yeah.
Yeah. As far as like the banks themselves, the lenders themselves, the people that are going to give you the money, affordability is the next thing for them. They're going to look at, all right, at a very base level, when we give them the payment that they're going to have for how much money they're looking for, how does that affect the business, right? If it affects the business negatively, well, they're not going to do it. And believe it or not, if it's too positive, right? If there's too substantial of a change to the business, they don't like that either. They like to see
Sure.
that when you take $1 million, it's because you needed $1 million to keep the operation status quo. You know, you might see a 5% bump or a 10% bump in your business, but they don't want to see that you're adding, you know, a whole new product line that you've never done before. And, you know, you might think that that's a great opportunity for yourself as a business owner, and it is. But the underwriter wants to know that regardless of this new opportunity, you're going to be able to pay back this loan.
That's for sure. Yeah. So any lender is going to look at the potential risk associated with the capital that they're potentially investing and lending into the borrower, into the business. Starting something that's brand new is considered to be high risk. You know, the use of pro this is kind of like the back to the use of
100%.
proceeds, right? It's got to make sense, right?
100%.
Like if they see that this is a brand, basically almost like a start, a side business that you're developing into your existing business, well, they want to know, you know, you have experience with that. You
Yep.
have a solid plan for this. You have everything makes sense, basically, that you know what you're doing. You're going into the project with a good understanding of what you're doing. And even so, even with, you know, sufficient experience and a solid business plan, again, if it's a brand new endeavor, it doesn't really mold well into your existing model. Well, it's absolutely high risk, and it's
It becomes
low
extremely
probability of
difficult.
success.
Yeah, it becomes
Yeah.
extremely difficult to get access to that type of capital. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you be careful what you tell the underwriters, right? Like that's the wrong piece of advice. What I'm telling you is make sure that when you're applying for funding, you have a clear, precise plan that is going to utilize that capital in a way that is not going to create major waves. That's what I'm telling you. It should be status quo, right? If you're borrowing $1 million, it shouldn't be because your business only does $60,000 a year. And if you only had a million, you could do 10 million. Well, this is an investment. This is the lending industry is not built on the chance takers. You know, that's a their bet, their professional gamblers. Essentially, the underwriters are professional gamblers, and they're taking a look at the risk and the reward, and they usually overprotect themselves.
That is 100% certain.
You know, and it's smart to know that as a borrower, right? Because you can leverage their capital. You know, that's the upside to it, right? You know, I was able to buy my house because I was able to leverage capital that was not mine, you know, regardless of what the interest rates were or where they were going or what everybody was saying at the time. I still bought a house in the last 24 months. You know, it's when you need it, you need it. Credit worthiness. This is one that I wanted to point out really quick before we go to the next slide, just because you have a multitude of different kinds of credit worthiness. Worthiness, excuse me. I can't even say that. And where I want to start with this is to just kind of expand your thought process a little bit, because everybody goes right to their FICO credit score, as you should. If you're a sub 500 borrower, getting $1 million is probably out of the question. You know, if you're a 650 borrower, now we're starting to get there. If you're a 700 plus borrower, you have a much better chance where we're starting to get to where we need to be as far as like personal FICO goes, right? But it's bigger than that. If you're talking about a property purchase, whether it's commercial real estate, it's residential investment, whatever, if it's $1 million purchase or refi or whatever it is, part of that credit worthiness is the actual property itself. Is the appraisal that they're going to do, is how recent was that appraisal? All of that is part of the credit worthiness. If you're talking equipment financing, it's the equipment itself. The equipment itself becomes part of it. And where is that equipment tiered, right? Like you may be saying to yourself, like, what is Tony talking about? Well, if you're a dentist, right, and you're going to outfit your whole office, the tiers of equipment are going to be much different. For example, the seat that they sit in your office is going to be one. The X-ray machine that you use is going to be in a different tier. The little thing that you use to, you know, suck all the saliva out is going to be a different tier of types of equipment. And based on where that invoice adds up and the different types of equipment, that's going to give you the overall credit worthiness of that application, right? That all becomes a part of this when you start to tie assets in, when you start to tie the business in. There's business credit, there's personal credit of the owners. You know, there's a lot that goes into credit worthiness.
Additionally, I mean, one of the things that gets overlooked very often is even if you have a strong credit score, you could have a 750 plus credit score, but if you don't have depth of trades or you haven't had any established trade lines that are similar to the type of trade line that you're requesting in terms of amount or monthly payment, and usually the lender is going to use a ratio. It doesn't have to be dollar for dollar, but you know, they might say, hey, it's got to be you have to have at least one trade. This is very common with equipment financing. You have to have at least one trade for, let's say, and again, every lender is different, but one trade that's at least half of the original balance is at least half of the invoice amount or the total financing request. So if you're going in and you're asking for $1 million, and it's one of these, you know, non-bank equipment lenders that has these types of guidelines where they're looking at, prior trade line activity. You know, again, that would mean if their guidelines specify that they want to see at least one active trade open for at least a 12 to 24 month period for at least half, the original balance being at least half of the financing request, you're asking for $1 million. That means you have to have at least one trade line for half a million open for at least 12 to 24 months with no late payments. That's the other key. No late payments. If that trade has any late payments on it during that time frame, then that trade line cannot be counted or considered towards the underwriting process. So that gets overlooked very often, as you noted too. PayNet just as important. So you could have a borrower. We just had this happen. We had a borrower looking for SBA financing. Phenomenal personal credit, like a 780 plus score, plenty of depth of trades. excellent cash flow in the business. The PayNet score came back abysmal. I think I want to say, I don't remember exactly what it was. I want to believe it was below, I believe it was below 640, or depending on which one they ran, it was not great. It was subpar, and that alone blew up the deal. That PayNet score blew out the deal on its own. So yeah, so lenders on a commercial level, on a business level, lenders are looking at personal credit, depth of trades, and PayNet, business credit. All are significant to the underwriting process.
200%. So we just touched on this a lot, but just to kind of summarize it for you again, right? The ability to repay the loan, right? Regardless of the scenarios, if things worked out with the deal, if they didn't work out, right? If whatever, you have to be able to repay. They're looking to lower the risk by any means. So if you have assets, they're going to look to overprotect themselves on their investment, right? So they're going to look to tie those assets to this type of deal. And one of the things that I want to make very clear is, where does this level start, right? It's different for every lender, but like when you're talking about $1 million, anybody that's lending $1 million, this is what the system looks like, right? For some lenders, it's over 150K that they become full package.
Right.
Right, or full pack. If there is a another lender, it might be 250,000. Some lenders now, we're getting less and less, it might be 300 or 350,000. Then there's very few that number is 500,000 or 600,000. When you start to talk about the people that are giving you $1 million, it's a small bucket.
Yep.
The industry, they work together,
note,
the
it's
industry
always a
is
full
small.
pack.
Yeah, and it's always a full pack. Exactly. So just keep that in mind as you're applying or as you're thinking about working with borrowers who need this much money, right? So we touched on this a little bit, right? Secured lending, unsecured lending, some of what Steve's prior experience was versus where my own has been. And I wanted to just make sure that we had a slide that really went over that for you guys to show, hey, they're different arms, right? With two hands, but both hands wash the face, right?
Good analogy.
Just keep that in mind, when you're using this. What we see a lot of times is borrowers who will combine some of the different scenarios, right, where they may say, hey, I need a certain amount of capital for equipment, I'm buying this $500,000 piece of real estate, and I have a need for $125,000 in cash, right? So they'll use a couple of different products, right? There may be a commercial real estate piece, there might be a line of credit piece or a term loan piece, there might be equipment financing. All of this might get wrapped up with an SBA inside of 6 to 9 months, depending on what the long-term process looks like, right? So I just want to keep that in mind as we go through the next few slides. Not only are these products interchangeable in terms of a $1 million request a lot of the times, but you'll also see them be used in tandem to get somebody to where they need to be. Just keeping the presentation going here, right? I told you we were going to go over some of the common mistakes, right? Number one, I would say, is this not enough collateral,
Absolutely.
right? And what does that mean? Well, one of the biggest things that people forget is when you look at an accounting lens, you look at cash in a business, cash is an asset. Assets are where collateral comes from. So if you don't have enough cash, right? I know not profitable is also on here, but like if you don't have enough cash on hand, well, they're going to see that. They're going to see that you can't really afford the loan. And then obviously there's all the other assets, right? We talked a lot about overprotection. So if you're looking at somebody and they do have AR and their AR is paying, well, somebody's going to look to scoop up that accounts receivable, right? They're going to want to put a lien on that just to protect themselves. Right now, if they're a borrower who's looking for $1 million and all they have is 250,000 worth of receivables, well, that's not Probably enough, depending on how quickly they're turning that and how quickly, things are looking. But for the most part, 250 isn't going to get you a million. So you have to remember that, right? If you're talking about a property, you can't get $1 million on a property if it's worth 600 grand and you owe 500,000.
Sure.
And I know that, for a lot of people on this call, that may seem like, simple information, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I just
Definitely.
want to be very clear about, like, when I say not enough collateral, I'm talking about you have to actually be over and above if we're talking the collateral world. Now, same
Certainly.
thing in the cash world. You want to go get $1 million cash advance or term loan or, line of credit from somewhere, you're going to need a substantial amount of cash to qualify for $1 million. That's really what it comes down to. Poor credit, automatic no. I would say, as far as the SBA is concerned, you can get as low as, like, what, like a 640?
650,
Yeah.
640 in some
Yeah,
cases,
we're
but
pushing.
yeah, I mean, and in those cases, you need compensating fat. Something else has to balance out the lower credit score, like really strong cash flow, strong collateral, something there that really, boosts and carries,
A great use of funds.
right, averages out the low weight. Yeah,
Yep.
use of proceeds if they're taking, the consolidating debt and their debt service coverage ratio is going from a 1.05 to a 2, that's a major compensating factor.
Yep.
Things like that will
Yeah,
help.
buying real estate in there, that'll help. Again, that's probably the bare bones minimum across the board here. If you're going to qualify for an AR line of $1 million and they pull your credit and they see that you're, 620, it's going to be tough. It's
Certainly.
going to be tough. I would say you're looking 650 minimum. You're looking, at you have to be making a good amount of money,
Fifth magic number when we're talking about conventional or any type of secured type of loan where it's where there's a cash flow parameter, a cash flow driver in the underwriting guidelines, the magic number is 15% more EBITDA than proposed debt. So what do I mean by that, right? If EBITDA is 115,000 annual and total debt, meaning the debt that we're proposing, plus any other existing debt, if they have an equipment loan, if they have so any other type of working capital loan that we're not going to pay off through our loan proceeds, then the total combined annual payments for that debt would not be able to exceed 100,000, right? So if we have 115,000 in EBITDA and we have 100,000 in total proposed annual payments on the debt, total debt obligation, 115 is 15% greater than 100. So that's the magic number. 1.1, that's the same thing as saying a 1.15 DSCR. So anything more than that means that you're in pretty good shape in terms of cash flow.
And that's going to be, I know the last few, right? Not enough time in business, no business checking account, right? These seem like, simple factors, but again, it's common mistakes. You wouldn't believe how many people are making a lot of money, but they're using a personal checking account. Like, we see it all the time.
One note, I just want to come back to that slide, if you don't mind, Tony. Tony, I don't even know if you realized it, but what we just outlined here are the five C's or the five pillars of credit and underwriting. So, not enough collateral. Collateral, that's one of the main points of underwriting. What's the collateral? What's the asset that we're leveraging? Poor credit, credit or character, that's one of the other C's, right? And obviously, we're talking about their credit rating, personal credit, as we talked about, PayNet as well, depth of trades as well, as we noted before. Profitability, that talks about cash flow, the ability to service the debt payments, the debt obligation. Not enough time in business. This is what we refer to as conditions. So use of proceeds, the potential rate, is the rate 20%? I mean, where that's exorbitant, would that make sense for the lender? Is that posing too much of a high risk for the borrower to afford? The loan amount, is it just simply too high for the type of business that we're working with? The industry, maybe the industry is specifically struggling a bit. Transportation right now has been struggling the last several years. So that's all part of the conditions part of the deal. Bank account. We're talking about capital, cash on hand, reserves. So if they have if they have 12 to 24 months of reserves on hand at all times, well, that lowers the risk quite a bit. They could go through a couple of months of a downturn and still survive.
Yep, exactly. 100%. So just to kind of clear it up, right? If you're going to go get $1 million, and this is minimums. I want you to know, like, this is minimums. I'm not guaranteeing you're going to go get $1 million if you meet this, but I'm guaranteeing that you can apply for it, and with the right guidance and with the right mixture of products and the right use of funds, you can get there. But this is the bare bones minimum. We were talking about it just a couple seconds ago. 620, 640, 650. That's pretty much, the bare bones minimum on the credit side. We're seeing anybody that's going to get $1 million, they got to be doing $3, $5, $10 million annually. They're real businesses that have real problems or real opportunities. And that's what they're using the $1 million for. It's a big part of it. Now, why we're talking about it again is because most people aren't servicing this part of the market at the moment, right? So what does it look like to service the market? Well, this is what it looks like, right? You have these scenarios where businesses that have been around for a few years, they have, a true use of funds, right? The first success story here, declined at their local bank. This is the one that we're hearing the most of right now. Maybe it's because most of our partners are ex-bankers or, business bankers and relationship managers, but we're seeing a lot of the declined at their local bank, and are using the money to as a bridge, right? Whether it's to finish a project, start a project, it's to pay off vendors, just kind of keep things going in the right direction, getting them access to more capital, right? What comes from finishing a project is cash, right? When you finish that project, the $1 million loan, all of a sudden, the loan was taken to finish the project, and we could be talking about $3, $5, $10 million of access to capital going forward, or revenue in their business. When you're talking about the right thing here. The one in the center, professional services. We hear it time and time again, the insurance companies don't make it easy to get paid. So this borrower here, they were switching some things on the back end with some of their service providers. And because of that, they had a lapse in their ability to collect payments from Blue Cross Blue Shield.
That's right.
And it was one of their major ways of earning. Medical staffing the past few years has been one of the biggest industries. And because of that, you have a borrower here who needed the capital to continue to pay, to continue to operate their business, right? Like, when you're talking about a business like staffing, the best thing that you have are good recruiters and a team of people that are out there, doing this for you, and ultimately delivering that product on the, on the back end. Well, if you're waiting to get paid on the front end and you can't afford to pay your staff, well, it's only so long that you're going to have a business,
Right.
right? So, it becomes very important to access this stuff and get access to the funds.
Yeah, in this particular case, this is a business owner that's been in play, been in a medical facility. It's been in place for many years. Very strong borrower, had an issue, not any issue that he created. He had an issue with his medical billing provider, his third-party billing provider. About 6 to 12 months, I want to say, before he went in for the application. And that issue, it actually created a butterfly effect for him, which could have been pretty severe if he had not connected with us. He had a several million dollar line of credit with his bank, a conventional bank. That bank was looking to terminate that loan. They were not looking to extend the terms on that loan because of the cash flow, the minor cash flow issues, temporary cash flow issues that they experienced as a result of the medical billing issues with their third-party provider. So we were able to come in and leverage their AR, which we were able to work around any of the AR that wasn't affected by the medical biller. Really, but that was anything that was billed within the last 6 months out. Leveraged the AR, got him the funds he needed, gave him some additional working capital on top of it, and it was all set. I mean, it was a time crunch for sure, dealing with the timeline that the bank provided for exit of the existing loans. But again, using the right collateral, we were able to structure the right credit facility to help the borrower.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this last one here, the trucking example. This is a good way to just show how you can use multiple options or multiple products to meet what you're looking for, right? So this customer here was able to leverage their existing fleet of trucks, knowing that they're going to continue to purchase equipment. And they leverage their existing equipment to get access to a line of credit that will allow them to purchase more going forward. Now, immediately, they were buying, I think it was either three or five trucks and trailers immediately on the line. There was a need for them to add to the fleet. So what else did they take? I believe it was 250,000 on a line or
Something
350,000 on a line of credit, where they were able to get access to working capital on top of this, right? So that's how we get to the 1.5 million is because they're able to utilize that line of credit and draw on it and pay it down, draw on it and pay it down as they're hiring new employees and bringing, increased payroll. It's just there to be a reserve for them. So,
This was like a hybrid equipment line and a working capital line, if I remember correctly, right?
Correct. Where they were able to leverage their revenue separately from the equipment transaction.
That's right.
And that's the beauty of working with a broker, honestly. If you would have went directly to the equipment finance lender, they would have serviced your need. If you would have went directly to the working capital lender, they would have serviced your need. But in a broker's seat, we're able to help put the deal together, and it.
A perfect example of structured finance.
Yeah.
And again, with creativity on the broker level, we have access to a variety of different lenders with different options. We have the ability to get creative like that.
Absolutely. So just a couple of things, right? Why are you here if you're new to us? And I see a couple of questions already in the Q&A about some of these things. But as far as what are we talking about? We're talking about partnering with Rock, right? If you're somebody that is a partner with us already, shout out to you for being on this and coming back month after month and being a part of our web series. But the other part is people that have never worked with us before. So just to give you a quick overview, why do partners work with Rock? Number one, it's the rock stars like Steve and I. No, I'm just kidding. It's everybody else. Realistically, it's all the other rock stars on the team. You get direct access to multiple points of contact throughout the team. And the reason that I keep saying the word team is because that's what you're joining. You're getting your own commercial finance team. I always tell every partner that signs on with us, you just congrats because you just became the CEO of your own commercial finance brokerage. How would you like it to operate? And that's the beauty of our partnership. We have the technology to back that and give you the most streamlined process out there from taking your deals from application to approval and approval to funding, and ultimately providing an extremely aggressive referral commission based on how much volume you're able to produce with us. There's residual opportunity, there's investment opportunity, there's the ability to get paid more on the upfront, there's all sorts of different things there. So if you're interested, I would tell you make sure that you reach out to us and partner with us now, because that's really what it's all about. I wanted to do something a little different here, and this is a new thing that I think we're going to put in going forward. But I reached out to the team and said, we all work with hundreds of partners. What are some things that make a good partner? Right? Because I think sometimes we talk about how great of a partner we are. Well, it's got nothing to do with us. It's got everything to do with
That's
how
right.
our partners use what we have, right? So I reached out to a
Structured.
few guys on the team here. You might be working with some of these guys. You may have spoken with them in the past. Shout out to these four for providing some feedback. But what's resounding to me behind this is I noticed it's more about communication than anything. Those partners that just have a real conversation are able to really take advantage of the different resources that we have. Right. So, like Nick mentioned, the best way to achieve success is by collaborating when connecting with Rock to your clients. right? Whether that's the intro call or gathering docs, you as a partner can say, hey, listen, when you work with Rock, you're going to speak with a representative who's going to walk you through your transaction, right? You may think that that doesn't go a long way. I can't tell you how far that actually goes. Or it's like Justin mentioned at the bottom, it's being able to service their clientele while also leveraging the different products that we have on our platform. So we have a lot of different partners who they sell different pieces of equipment, or they sell commercial real estate, or they're involved in transactions where there's a huge value add into being a partner, along with the fact that they're going to make, the commissions, which are, high paying, right? So it's all about working together. It's all about really doing what everybody can to ultimately get a deal through the finish line. There's more reasons that deals don't get done than there are that they get done. That's the one thing I always remind the sales teams and the guys on the sales floor is because sometimes it's out of our control. It's the borrower, it's the lender, it's the guidelines, it's the government, it's whoever, right? If we're talking SBA, it's a little bit of all of them. But realistically, don't be the reason that the deal doesn't fund, right? And if you can have a really solid, rock solid partnership, as I would call it, that streamlined process between us and yourself really allows the back end of everything else to work together. So if you're somebody who is looking for more information, you're not sure yet, or if you're like, Tony, stop talking, I just want to sign up, this is the link for you. Please pull out your cell phones. I know it's 2024, everybody got them. Scan this link here and it will take you directly to becoming a partner now. You get access to our directly into our CRM through our My Partner portal, where you'll have be able to go through your pipeline, get access to training, marketing materials, custom landing pages, white label experience. How many benefits you think I could list?
I think we could fill several pages.
But no, please, if you're new, let's rock out together. If you're not new, or you are new and you're wondering, all right, how do I stay up to date on this stuff? Social media is probably the most important area. Every one of us have our own social media. This here is a chance for you to follow the Rock social media, where you'll get daily business tips, sales tips and tricks, how we market our products, what partnerships we're looking at, all different types of things, whether it's regulation related, whether it is product information related. We make sure that anything that's happening in commercial finance and fintech, you're aware of by following us on social. So make sure that you're following us, and we will follow back. Right, ladies? We're following back. All right, good. They gave me the head shake from behind the camera, so we're good. I think we're kind of getting there. If you're somebody that doesn't want to wait, right, feel free to call us now, 833-3-ROCK-BIZ. That's 833-3-ROCK-BIZ. I feel like I'm on the radio when I say that. But no, feel free to check out our website. You can email us. One thing I want you to know is we're real people. We're here to really talk with you, have real conversations, and we're excited to get a chance to connect with you. The one thing I want you guys to keep in mind is we're going to be back here again next month, giving you more information, giving you more insight. I want to thank Steve for joining me again. I want to thank you guys for rocking out with us for over an hour. And thank you for your questions. Thank you to everybody that put this thing together. And make sure you're keeping an eye out for the announcement about our next webinar. And we'll check you guys back here next month. Thanks, everybody.
This has been a Rock Studios production.